So this is the second in a series of talks, actually the third in a series of talks on affirmative prayer. The first one, Reverend Dennis gave a talk on spiritual mind treatment and affirmative prayer in general, and that's up on the website. And last time, Pita gave a talk on the first step of treatment, which is recognition. And both of those were a powerful opportunity to think about prayer and what prayer means to us. And in Science of Mind, we look at prayer in a little different way. In some religions, there is the idea that prayer is about asking God for what we need and thanking God for what we have. And the focus on prayer in Science of Mind is recognizing who we are and knowing what God is. And so the first step of treatment, recognition, that we talked about last time was focusing on what we know God to be today, recognizing that there is more of God than we will ever know, that it's impossible to exhaust the ability to experience and know and love more that God is. It's infinite and eternal and beyond time and space entirely, the creative life force that began it all and continues to move through everything that is. So we, in doing our first step of our affirmative prayers, think about God. We love God. We explore God in that first step. And the last time, Pita had us do a very powerful exercise where she gave us 15 minutes to sit and simply write about what we knew about God. And everyone in the room took that knowing to a deeper level that day and used that time to think about the qualities of God and their experience of God and what they knew about God. And listening to those lists that people had created just blew me away, because each of us has a unique perspective on that divine presence in our lives, and the presence in the universe that is just exquisite and expansive. So as I've been teaching Science of Mind, I've been a practitioner for 17 years now. That's a long time. I've been teaching prayer for 17 years, and every person's prayer is beautiful in its own way. Each of us are a unique expression of God. And the second step of treatment is to bring into conscious awareness the idea that whatever we said in the recognition step, in step one, that God is, that I am that as well. Because I am a personification of that divine life in this life. I am God expressing. And all of the qualities of God that exist around me and in me and through me are available to be amplified by my attention to them. And that nature of God already exists within me. The nature of I am is God in expression. And so recognizing and knowing that divine life is everywhere, I can then bring it home and accept and know that that divine life is right here and right now as me. What Ernest Holmes said in the Science of Mind textbook is, I am joy, peace, and happiness. I am the spirit of joy within me. I am the spirit of peace within me, of poise and of power. I am the spirit of happiness within me. I radiate life. I am life. There is one life, and that life is my life now. It is not enough to say, there is one life, and that life is God. We must complete the statement by saying, that life is my life now. Because we must couple this life with ours in order to express it. We are not becoming this life, but are now in and of this life. Spirit is living in us as us now. This is not something we are trying to create. This is something we are learning to recognize that already is. So in step one, we recognize that God is. In step two, we unify with that oneness and acknowledge that we know ourselves, that we are that divine life in expression. So the power of spiritual mind treatment is to do what Ernest just said, to acknowledge that there is one life, that life is God's life, and that step two, that life, is my life now. I am that. I am. I am that. I am. Whatever I say God is, then I am that. I am. Now, sometimes I don't recognize that I am that. When I feel sad or scared or angry, I am not recognizing the divine life within me. I am working out limiting patterns of thought that I've absorbed, that I've trained myself into by thinking over and over again, limiting beliefs. I may have absorbed them from my culture. I may have absorbed them from my family. It doesn't matter where they came from. My job is to clarify my thinking, to remember who I am, to remember what God is, and to look for it everywhere I go. That is the point of prayer. It is to create a consistent reminder in our lives that God is present and that we are that. I read a lovely little book by Wayne Muller this week. He's a wonderful author. He wrote a book that I adore called Sabbath that I talked about last year in here, one of my all-time favorite books. And in this little book on prayer, he wrote, "Prayer is a doorway into heaven on earth. It can open and clear our eyes and ears, quicken our heart and deepen our mindfulness so that we may more easily discern where heaven lives in this moment, in this place." Heaven is here now. We recognize it to the degree that we recognize it. But our lack of recognition of it doesn't mean that it is not here. It means that in this moment, we see through a glass darkly. We don't necessarily perceive it. But the truth is, it's here now. That is the ultimate truth. And so what we are doing when we pray is bringing our awareness into alignment with that truth. However we get there, whatever happens through the process of prayer, we are intending through the prayer to open our minds, to open our hearts, to live in the love, to recognize the qualities of God and feel them within us, and to allow them to flow into the world as us, through us. My favorite book that Ernest Holmes wrote, or rather was compiled from the talks that he gave, actually, in the last 10 years of his life, is called Anatomy of Healing Prayer. It's part of the Holmes Papers series and has been some of the most enlightening reading I've ever done in my life. This is one of the books where I can tell you what page the epiphany took place on. For me. And actually my epiphany page is page 16, where Ernest Holmes said, "We are not trying to reintegrate or disintegrate anything. We are trying to find that which is not disintegrated, that its substance will cast a new shadow on the pathway of this experience from the center of its own being, which is eternal harmony, eternal peace." Which I have summarized in my own mind is, we are not trying to disintegrate or reintegrate anything. We are revealing the wholeness that has always existed right there by our attention to it. And another page that is so meaningful to me is page 61. And I'm just laughing within myself at the synchronicity of this, because last week I went on a trip, and the first night we stayed in room 16 at Peaks of Otter Lodge, and the second night we stayed in room 16 at the Hemlock Inn in Blowing Rock. And the third day we stopped for a picnic, and my friend put our stuff on a picnic table, and as we walked toward it, I looked, and it was number 16. And 16 numerologically is a 7, and so that was 3 sevens, lucky sevens. We hit jackpot at 21 with our three sevens. We were so in sync on that trip. We kept having synchronicity after synchronicity. And I'm going to tell you one of the stories of that. But now as I look at page 61 and another 7, having just read you page 16 and another 7, I delight in the way the universe plays with us. Because we are always beloved. The universe wants us to know how deeply we are loved. And the universe has an incredible sense of humor. The universe is reverence and irreverence. The universe is humor and lightness of being. The universe is the deepest peace and the greatest love and the most amazing belly laugh that we can come up with. That expression of passion and exhilaration and excitement and eagerness for life is that God expression through us. And what Holmes said here is the overdwelling presence is the indwelling person. God in you, as you, is you. There is nothing else you can be. You didn't have anything to do with it. You didn't make it, and you can't change it. You can't do anything that was good enough to earn it, and you can't do anything bad enough to destroy it. We are here to express that which is, and that is what accounts for all those inward feelings that everyone has, nebulous and incoherent at times, sometimes nearer the surface than at other times, but a steady persistency back of all things. An urge to live, to sing, to dance, to express life, and to create. Just as we dad sang in her song, we are here to sing our song. We are here to dance our life. We are here to know the truth. Holmes told a story in this book about working with a singer, and she said to him, I want my concert that you're coming to tomorrow night to be the best one I ever gave because you are there. And he said to her, it will be the best one you ever gave because you are God singing. And he said, this is God singing. It doesn't obliterate her personality. It's the only thing that enhances it. God sings in her as her. And we all sing within us, as us. And one of the synchronicities that happened to me last week on the trip to Asheville that just blew me away, when I had told the story to everyone who would sit still long enough to listen, it kept making me cry. It touched me so deeply. I finally realized that that was the subject of this talk. That's why this story was making me cry. So I have another opportunity to share it here today, which is so exciting. Because my friend that I went with to Asheville plans the trip. She loves planning trips. And she has a belief that her ability to plan trips is magic. So she says, I go on Google, I work my magic, I find the perfect place to stay. I find the exact path that's going to be most wonderful for us. And we have a great time unfolding on these road trips. And road trips haven't necessarily been my favorite thing in my life. Many hours in a car just doesn't necessarily turn me on. But I was inspired by her enthusiasm for this idea and decided I was going to stay open and give it a chance. And as I said, we came up with lucky seven at every turn, and it was clear that things were unfolding beautifully. And we were driving down Skyline Drive in Blue Ridge Parkway, and we left here in the pouring rain on Tuesday morning last week. And we had a chance to bemoan the fact that we were driving in the rain and the fog on some of the most beautiful territory, certainly in the state of Virginia, but clearly in the world in many ways. And we could see about as far as the nearest tree on the side of the road. But we didn't succumb to the temptation to complain and to focus on what wasn't working. We decided to focus on what was working, our love for each other, our ability to converse about things that inspire and delight us. We listened to wonderful music. We sang a lot of the way. And as we drove up to another overlook where we couldn't see 10 feet beyond the parking lot, we imagined what the valley looked like in front of us, and we talked about the beauty of the mountains and the excitement that we had for being on the trip. And we made up what we couldn't see until we could see it. And in places, the fog broke and the mountains appeared before us in all of their incredible colors of green. And they were magnificent. And we would come around a corner and a flame azalea would be in brilliant orange bloom. And the startling nature of the bright orange in the middle of all the gray was just way more stunning than it would have been on a bright sunny day where sunshine was normal. And we saw hundreds, if not thousands, of blooming rhododendrons. And because of the rain, there were incredible waterfalls that just were gushing in places where they don't even normally gush. And we kept gushing about the waterfalls and basking in the beauty of the things we were able to see. And the more we looked for things that were beautiful, the more beautiful that we found the small details of life that were apparent to us in the fog that we probably would have missed. If it had been a sunshiny day, we would have been looking at the macro rather than the micro. But there is beauty in the micro, and we saw 16 individual wild turkeys over the course of the time we were driving. Now, I've never seen wild turkeys in abundance in my life, and we had an abundance of wild turkeys. And I was so clear that that abundance was the abundance of life presenting to us. And we celebrated each of the turkeys we saw, and we celebrated each of the deer that ran through the field or ran by the window in the restaurant. And we celebrated the wonderful food we were eating and the comfort of the beds we were sleeping in and the grandeur of the water pressure in the shower in the hotel room. Every bit of what was beautiful we looked for and talked about and appreciated. And on the... let's see, we left on Tuesday. On Thursday morning, we woke up in Blowing Rock, North Carolina. And the previous evening, we had driven into Blowing Rock at about 4 o'clock, 4:30, and the sun had come out. And we hadn't seen sun in 2 days. And it was like this incredible celebration of abundance that we had this sunshiny hour. And we walked around this beautiful little town that is filled with parks and flowers and lovely shops with beautiful windows and terrific restaurants and wonderful bed and breakfasts and beautiful churches. And the rhododendrons and the azaleas and many of the flowering plants were in bloom, and the colors were riotous. And they have done more landscaping in that little town than any little town I have ever seen. It was spectacular, and we just adored it. And we walked down this street and that, and we walked through this park and by this pond and saw this little waterfall and found these benches that were donations of the people in the town for the celebration of the town, and we just loved it. And we woke up on Thursday morning intending to leave early and drive into Asheville, and we were going to have breakfast before we left. And the only restaurant we'd seen the night before that was open for breakfast didn't open until 8 o'clock. And we'd gotten an early start, and it was not even 7:30 yet, and so we decided to take a little walk again through town. And as we got to the top of the hill, up half a block from our bed and breakfast, or our hotel, we saw a police lady, and I said to her, "Where's the best place in town to have breakfast?" And she said, "The best place in town to have breakfast is Knights on Main, which is at the second stoplight to the left." And so we walked down about 6 blocks, and we saw this restaurant, and we crossed the street and went in, and they seated us in a booth, and we sat and opened the menu. And my friend looked down, and she said, "There's liver mush on the menu." And I said, liver mush? I've only ever heard of liver mush once in my life. It's in the books by Jan Carone about Mitford. The Mitford series talks about a man who loves liver mush. And when he wants a special treat, they go out and buy him liver mush and bring it home. Liver mush is, do you know what liverwurst is? It's a ground meat in a sausage. Yeah, it's a sausage. Liverwurst is a sausage. I found out liver mush is more like a brick, like scrapple, something like that.
Like cabbage?
I don't know what
happened. Sorry, my culture.
Yeah, but it's made of liver. Anyway, it's made of liver into a brick, and it's sliced and used on sandwiches and fried and served with eggs and various things. But I was reminded of the books by Jan Carone, and I love writing, and I appreciate writing that touches my heart. And on one of the pages in those seven books, Jan Carone, on two pages, just two pages, this tiny little vignette of a story, talked about the divine urge within us in a way that touched my heart more deeply than anything I have ever read anywhere. And I sat there in that booth at breakfast that morning and told that story to my friend, who herself had read those books and remembered the story but was willing to see it through my eyes. So let me tell you those two pages. In the book, up to that point, there has been a character introduced, a woman who was an alcoholic, who is now in recovery. But while she was actively alcoholic, she had, I think, five children. And basically she gave them all away, sold them or lost them in one way or another. All of her children were scattered. And since she has come into her own is in recovery and trying to recreate her life, she's trying to regather her family, find her children, and she's receiving help from this priest who the series is about, an Episcopal priest, Father Tim. And she now has a new mate who wants to be the father of these children who were lost. And they finally got a lead on the last little boy that they haven't found yet and brought back into the family. And they discover that he's living out in the woods and he's hustling pool to get money for himself and his father, who is actively alcoholic and abusive. And this little boy is living a very high contrast life at this point. He is struggling to survive. And they go out in the woods to try to make contact with this little boy and let him know he has another option, that there are people who would love to take care of him. And they encounter him in the woods, and they've brought pictures of his brothers and sisters, who he hasn't seen in 4 years, to lay on a rock. And they put the pictures on a rock, and they back off, and they say, come see the pictures if you want to. And he comes closer and they back up again, and they start to back up a third time, and he says, no, don't back up any further. And they say, why? And they look down and they discover that this little boy has created a garden in the woods. He has brought flowering plants from all over the woods to this one little clearing, in this powerful expression of his need to create beauty in his life. And it's all the more touching because as you read the stories, you realize that this little boy's grandfather is a gifted gardener. He has that gift within him to bring beauty to light through flowers and plants and horticulture. And this little boy has this divine urge within him. No matter what's happened to him in his life, he wants to express his love. He wants to share that beauty. He wants to be cared for and to care for others. He wants to express his love. And in the course of the story, he is gathered in and assisted. And he is brought back to his family, and his father is assisted as well. And the story has a very happy ending. the beauty of this little boy has been expressed, and it has been there all along. That divine urge within him was not suppressed even by the things that happened to him. And his love and his light is shining so brightly in this moment in this story. And every one of us has that light, has that urge. There is no person on the planet who doesn't have that exquisite urgency, that powerful need to express themselves. And every person in their own way, in their own time, is doing their best in this moment to express that urge. And as we acknowledge that urge within us, and we allow it to come out, as we allow that laughter to come out, as we allow that humor to come out, as we allow that beauty to be expressed through our music, through our dancing, through our parenting, through our work, through our cooking, through our walking in the woods, through our giving, whatever it is, whatever gift we have to give, that we can express in the world. That is God in action in the world. There is that desire within us to express. It is so powerful and it is so joyful when we let it out. When we allow ourselves to shine the light that we are, to move more powerfully into that truth about ourselves, to let ourselves be who we really came here to be. There is a song that Elaine Silva sings, and I should know who wrote it, but I can't think of it in the moment. It's called Swim Into the Other Side. And there's a line in it that says, when we get there to the other side, we'll discover all the gifts we've been given to share have been with us since life's beginning, but we never noticed they were there. And my response to that line every time I hear it is, not if I can help it. We have those gifts, and I will amplify those gifts in every person I see them in myself, in everything that I do. I try to recognize that divine gift, that divine light, that divine love in all of the people around me, to honor it, to bless it, to call it forth, to appreciate it and acknowledge it when I see it, and to allow it to shine more brightly than before. Because that's who we are. We are the light. We are the love. We are the peace. We are the power. We are the grace. We are here to be beautiful, to shine our light, to call others into the light, to acknowledge the light that we each are. We are grace. And that grace continues to unfold. It's good. It's ever waiting with more power. And the more we do it, the more we see it, and the more we love it, and the more we recognize it in ourselves and in each other. So I call you forward today to express the grace, the power, and the light of your life. That's what we're here to do. We're here to sparkle, and it's good. Thank you. Thank you.